Out in the desert lives a tiny tan troublemaker that treats civil engineering like psychological warfare. The Connemara ant spends its days bustling around deserts and grasslands looking for what seems like harmless debris. But beneath that innocent exterior lies a six-legged strategist with the creativity of a medieval siege engineer. But sometimes it pays to play offense and defense at the same time when you're playing the game of life, death, and taxonomy.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and Taxonomy. It's your 30 minutes of interesting animal information. I'm Joe.
And I'm Carlos.
Thank you to Cassie for the creation of our theme song. To hear more of Cassie's music, please search Cassie Michelle on YouTube or Spotify.
And a very special thank you to our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for helping us keep the lights on. If you'd like to donate, just visit patreon.com/LDTaxonomy or click on donate on our website at LDTaxonomy.com.
And today we're talking about a demolition ant, but more on that later.
Yeah, this is nefarious, but insects often are. Mm-hmm. As we say on this show, the bug world is a ruthless one. It's a buggy bug world out there.
A buggy bug. I used to think that was a buggy bug world.
A buggy
when they
bug.
They said that in
Bug's Life.
Bug's Life. Yeah.
It's a buggy bug world, and it's both.
It's really true.
But yeah, just be grateful that you are a human. if all else is going wrong, you are at least not having to deal with what these guys have to deal with.
True. But you know what they never have to do? Contemplate their own mortality.
They also don't have to delete spam emails from their inbox.
That's true.
They also don't have roofers knock on their door every other day because they're missing a shingle. So, you know, it's a give and take, really.
There's actually a lot of people that have that don't have that issue either because they don't have any shingles.
I know, but like, you kind of have to be a person to have the problem.
So not all people have the problem, but you have to be a person to have the problem.
That's right.
Oh, well, I guess if you are a dog with a doghouse with shingles, someone could knock on the doghouse and talk to a dog. The dog just wouldn't care.
So it wouldn't really be a problem for the dog.
Exactly, I guess.
In as much as there's an intruder at their doghouse. Anyway, what are we talking about? Not dogs.
We're talking about the Connemara ants. Is that what? Connemara? Connemara? Myrma? Myrma?
Yeah. I would say Myrma. Connemara.
Connemara ants.
Yeah, it's also called the bicolored pyramid ant.
Wow.
Cone ant. But we're going to call it here the crenellation sensation. The mini murder hole. And the Gravel Gavel.
The Gravel Gavel?
That's a superhero name, like the Hebrew hammer.
The judgment in the form of a small pebble.
Yeah, you're bringing down the rocks. Do you have a taxonomy for this?
I sure do. They're in the kingdom you know, love, and are in. The kingdom Animalia. The phylum, Arthropoda. The clade. Pancrustacea. I think we've done had this clade before.
I would love to have Pancrustacea.
Yeah. Pancrustacea.
Pancrustacea.
Yeah.
It's crustaceans everywhere.
Exactly.
Pancrustacea.
That sounds like it's the name of the fact that they think everything is evolving into crabs. Pancrustacea.
It sounds like a spell that kills all life on Earth except for crabs.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's carcinication or something.
Carcinocrustacea.
The class is Insecta. The order is Hymenoptera. The family is Formicidae. And that's the subfamily ants. Is Dolichodernae. Yeah,
Dolichodernae. Yeah, that's what I would say.
A Dolichodernae keeps the doctor away. And the genus is Dormyrmex. The species binomial name is Dormyrmex bicolor.
If only a dollar a day kept the doctor away, but that doesn't even cover the copay.
That's the good rhyme. That's a better rhyme than the Apple one.
A dollar a day doesn't cover the copay. But yeah, it's time for, since we're in the business of naming things, it's time for my favorite part of the show and the listener's favorite part of the show, nitty gritty nomenclature. We do a lot of ants, so we already know what the term of venery is. But this is the part of the show where I ask you, Joe, a question. That is, what is the English translation for the binomial nomenclature, which in this case is Dorymyrmex bicolor? I'm not going to insult your intelligence and try and make you guess what the second one is. Mm-hmm. So we're going to figure out what the first one is.
It's too hot.
Too bicolor.
Yeah.
Double hot. Yeah, this is the double hot ant. So what does Dorymyrmex mean? In English, does it mean A, desert warrior, B, rock carrier, C, spear ant, D, cone builder?
I like desert warrior. Final answer.
Gotcha. That is incorrect. I put that was the last one I put in there because I was like, what does Myrmex remind me of? Oh yeah, Myrmidons. They're warriors. So I put the warrior in there. The answer is spear ant. Myrmex is just Greek for ant.
And Dory is spear.
Yeah. When I found out it was spear ant, I was like, oh, like. So then, yeah, the Myrmidon warriors, do they have spears?
What's a Myrmidon warrior?
In the Iliad.
Ah.
The Myrmidons were like an elite group of warriors that fought with Achilles. I might be totally wrong about this. They were part of the war, the Trojan War. On the side of the Greeks with Achilles.
Did they phalanx with spears?
I don't know, because most of the Iliad is gods doing things while the humans do something else in the background. And that's relevant because we're about to get a movie from Christopher Nolan about what happens after the Iliad.
Right. They find Iron Man giants. War machines.
They find Iron Man giants?
Yeah, have you seen like the giants look like they're wearing armor? That make them, they look like War Machine.
They look like Iron Man because War Machine looks like Iron Man, but silver. It's Iron Man before the paint job.
Yeah. In the Bronze Age, we got steel plate armor.
It's magic. I'll believe that they have steel in the Bronze Age. If I can believe that they're gonna encounter Cyclopses and Cylons.
No. You can establish rules and follow them. You can't just break rules you don't establish.
And the gravity problem with the arrow he fires through all of the axe heads, like the arch wouldn't allow for that. The arch of the arrow.
They establish he's That's very difficult for everyone to do. But he's uniquely gifted.
No, the arc is too, the trajectory of the arc is too wide to go through the axe heads.
Unless yeah, the axe I heads don't are like think really, really Homer tested it. I'll be
I
honest.
Don't think he tested it.
I better figure out if I can do this before I put this in a book and look like a fool for a thousand years.
Every one chapter versed Homer. Like, you're gonna have to put your money where your mouth is here. Okay. Yeah, spear ant. Anyway, we talked about Greeks for a while, but
do you wanna know what it looks like?
Sure. I bet you it's bicolored.
It is. It's,
or it's double hot.
Bicolor is well earned. The head, thorax, and waist are dark reddish orange. The abdomen is a shiny black. So you know how there's red ants and black ants? This is both.
This one's both.
Bicolor. Like other members of its genus, it has a distinctive little cone-shaped bump at the back of its thorax. I wonder if that's why they called it a spear ant.
Yeah.
Although that's the middle of its back. So I you don't think of it. It looks more like a mountain peak in the back of its carapace.
Yeah, I'd call it a hump ant. Or a...
Eastern ridgeback ant.
Spine ant or something like that.
Yeah, spine ants.
Eastern... Yeah, it's... It's business finance. Yeah. It's my finance accountant.
It's financial. Let's talk about their size. Welcome to the Beloved Measure Up segment, the official listener's favorite part of this. Well, it's just that part of the show that's introduced by, it's when we present the animal size and dimensions in relatable terms through a quiz that's fun for the whole family. It's also part of the show that's introduced by you when you send an audio of yourself saying, singing, or chittering the words measure up into ldtaxonomy@gmail.com. We don't have a new measure up intro, but that means we get to hear from an animal. And Carlos is bound to tell us who it is. Without further ado,
like,
the listeners...
Like Sisyphus.
Part of the show.
Does it is it like an old Ant-Man cartoon or something?
No.
I don't know. It sounds really old. So I don't know. I have no idea.
That is Atom Ant. Atom, A-T-O-M. He's basically like a character kind of like Mighty Mouse. Very
like a
small
scientist.
Superhero.
Okay.
I think.
Never heard of it.
It's one of the Boomerang, or the Boomerang? The Hanna-Barbera, I think. Hanna-Barbera?
You're obsessed with Hanna-Barbera.
They just were thorough in choosing interesting animals.
I guess they kind of just threw all animals at the wall and to see what stuck. It's like, okay, this one's going to be a talking ant. This one's going to be a talking octopus. This is going to be a talking walrus.
Yeah. And the villains are all going to be different talking animals as well. So
it is a rich well to pull from, which I should probably be a little bit proactive and watch some of these. I should become familiar with this era of TV.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can not be confused.
Yeah. We didn't have a new measure up intro, but we did have a new email from Nora. She said, remember when everyone was convinced the sun bear was a man in a bear suit? I think we were joking that the sun bear, it's funny looking. It looks like it's not a real bear. It looks like a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
Nora says the lynx gives the same vibe. Something about the longer back legs always short circuits something in my brain and makes me think that's a person in a suit with a very good mask. I see it. It looks like it can stand up. It'll just like, all right, I've had enough, and then stand up on two legs.
Put its hands on its hips, arms akimbo.
Yeah. Look, it looks like it does have mascot hands. It has mascot paws.
Because it has those. Because it has to walk on snow.
Yes.
We talked about this.
We made a joke about Legolas, and she said it was delightful. I forget what the joke was, but
it was the fact that it walks on the snow like it's better than everyone else. Legolas let everybody else trudge through the snow, holding the hobbits, and Legolas is just you know, twinkle toes tiptoeing above on the surface of the snow, because I guess he doesn't weigh that much. I don't know how elf magic works.
Nora also says that when I was a kid, I would invent Transformers, Beast Wars robots, and my favorite was a Lynx. It's pretty good.
Oh, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Just put different animals in with the Beast Wars. I'm becoming a lot more. No, that's actually not true. I can't even back that up. I was gonna say I'm becoming a lot more knowledgeable of the Transformers universe because my son is super into Transformers. Mm-hmm. Like that's the thing he picked. But still like we've been watching the old cartoons and it's still like the same like four Transformers. So I still can't name more than four. Because when we started, he was like, what are other Transformers? I'm like, there's Optimus Prime, there's Bumblebee, there's Megatron and Starscream. That's it. Like, I don't know if there are any more. And then the first, like, six episodes of the old, like, 60s, the old 80s cartoon is just those four. So it's like, I think there's one that's like an ambulance or something. I don't remember. it's mostly those four.
I like the fact that Nora thinks that the Lynx looks like a person in a costume, but also when she was a kid, she was like, what if the Lynx was a robot?
Was a robot, yeah.
Either way, it's not a real animal.
What if the Lynx was a person? What if the Lynx was a robot?
Exactly. Yeah. The Lynx must be something else.
It's like the alien in Alien. It's either a person in a suit or it's a robot.
Right. True. True. Very true. Or E.T.
And we also got a message from Joy, or from Julia.
Via Joy,
darling of the show, via Joy. Who challenged my opinion on The Great Gatsby. What's wrong with The Great Gatsby, she said. Mm-hmm. And I won't, like, we don't have to open a whole discussion about it, but I don't like the novels, the Steinbeck novels, where it's like...
I like Steinbeck novels.
Here's a bunch of normal people.
I like that.
They're all like bad people. They're all people you wouldn't want to hang out with. They do a bunch of really morally like questionable things, and then they die. and then the book's over. Like there was no like rising action. There was no like climax or falling action. It's just a bunch of people doing normal stuff, but that's like normal, but morally questionable things. Mm-hmm. And then they die. So it's like Catcher in the Rye is like that. Flowers for Algernon is like that. The Of Mice and Men is like that. Madame Blueberry is based off of is like that.
Steinbeck is like a lot of those books, but Steinbeck especially, there's a theme that is being explored. It's not just like these are bad people, hooray. Like they all,
well, it's not just here's, but the, but I'm not like, I'm getting invested in like what's about to happen, and what's about to happen is they're just gonna die unceremoniously, and that's what's gonna happen. Not always about to happen,
not always with Steinbeck, but
things fall apart. Example.
But when it comes to The Great Gatsby, the themes are like, do you really care about the theme of old money and new money? Is that good for a high schooler, let alone anyone to explore.
That's not a theme. That's a factor. The theme is also unrequited love,
which is like very inappropriate on like the to married lady.
Holding a, if you want to read a book about someone who holds a torch for a married woman long after like that torch should have gone out, just read Harry Potter.
First of all, just read Harry Potter is a way bigger commitment than The Great Gatsby.
Just read the last one, I guess, and fill in the blanks.
Yeah, no.
Skip straight to the last one where it's revealed that Snape is a weird greasy boy. Just like Jay Gatsby is a weird greasy boy.
So the answer
is... A rich weird greasy boy.
The answer to the question, what's wrong with The Great Gatsby, is answered with the question, what's right with it?
I get that you can pull out all, like, tease out all of these motifs and themes and stuff, but it doesn't make for an interesting story to me.
But also, like, there's a lot of things where it's like, well, look, it's exploring this theme. Is it a theme worth exploring? A lot of these things have themes, but is it a good theme? Is it a good moral theme?
I remember, because we read it in 11th grade, and... I remember my teacher really harping on this, the fact that like they constantly drive past this billboard of this optician, like
the eyes,
optician, so the eyes, they're the eyes of God that are mm-hmm. watching this whole scenario, and it's like, yeah, but why? What is that? Why does that matter? Of course, God's watching this scenario. If in this world they decide that, like, that's a thing that happens, like. Are we communicating the idea that like nothing that they do is actually in secret because God sees everything? Is it a more secular view of just like whatever you do will eventually come to light?
Your secret sins will find you out.
Right, which is kind of what ends up happening. But like, again, it's you get invested in these characters, like, okay, I wonder how, like, this is all going to come together. And it's like, nope. They just die. And then...
And hey, this plot is nothing a car accident can't fix.
Hey, that's what they said about Stranger Things Season 5. Anyway, we're way off track. But I am going to start saying this plot is nothing a car accident can't fix, and I'm going to start incorporating that into my film critique parlance. this bloated cast, this is nothing a car accident can't fix.
Yeah. Okay. Only fictional ones. Only fictional ones.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, just talking about fictional things. But let's. What else do we have to talk about? Oh, we're getting. We haven't even done Measure Up yet.
No, but the worker ants are 3 to 5 millimeters long, or 0.12 to 0.20 inches. Might as well just learn what a millimeter is. An inch is too big. It's a mile long. To give them an inch, they'll take a mile because they're the same.
0.
Zero point two zero.
You put a zero at the end of.
Yeah, because the other one was 0.12. So you know how, you know. So you okay. know what it is than the next decimal place. Pueblo people lived in pueblos. I wonder if they named them after the houses they live in.
This follows. The teepee people lived in teepees.
What came first, the people or the houses?
The pyramid people lived in pyramids. We all remember the pyramid people.
The Pueblo people lived in pueblos made of adobe bricks. There's a lot of B's and P's in it.
A pueblo is just a town, but I guess it's also like a
An adobe.
A style of building.
Yeah. Adobe bricks are made by pressing a mud mixture and reinforced with straw into wooden molds. And after partially setting, the molds are removed and the bricks are slowly dried, first flat and then on their edges to minimize cracking. And then the same mud mixture, usually without the straw, is used as mortar and wall plaster, with some cultures adding lime-based coatings to improve resistance to rain. So, you know, like when you're looking at a Pueblo and it's just like this smooth, like, Flintstones house, it's actually bricks. It's a brick building, like essentially covered in stucco.
It's iced.
Or mud stucco, yeah. It's a cake, yeah.
Well, it's like when you mud drywall. It's the same thing.
Right.
It's a bunch of panels, but then you just cover the whole thing in.
Mm-hmm.
Mud.
So it looks nice and smooth. True or false, 20 workers go into the length of an American adobe brick. There are adobes in, like, all over the world. These mud brick structures. Obviously, because, hey, guess what's all over the world? Mud.
And straw.
Straw. Yeah.
Unless you have to make bricks without straw.
They're generally a particular size.
You say 20?
20 workers.
20 workers, and they're 0.2 inches. Mm-hmm. So no. Because 20 workers would be like, that'd be like a 4-inch brick, right? Yeah. Yep, that'd be a 4-inch brick. So I'm going to say no. I think the bricks are...
The bricks of Terabithia?
Bigger. Yes.
1 second.
I mean, I guess you could have a brick that's 4 inches long. That'd just be really small. I feel like that would just be really tedious.
The final answer?
Is false.
Correct answer is false.
It's bigger than that.
Yeah, adobe bricks are about 25 to 36 centimeters or 10 to 14 inches.
That makes a lot more sense and sounds a lot less tedious than trying to build a house out of 4-inch bricks, out of Legos, out of Mega Blocks.
Queens, on the other hand, are 6 to 8 millimeters or 0.24 to 0.31. That's slightly bigger.
Slightly.
A giant desert hairy scorpion. I don't think those adjectives are in the right order, but such is the way with animal names. The giant desert hairy scorpion is the largest scorpion in North America, despite its size. Its sting is about as painful and as dangerous as a honeybee sting. There's a lot of things that you think are going to be like really big issues when you're a child.
And scorpions is one of them.
Yeah. Like quicksand.
Swarms of bees.
Swarms of bees could be.
That can form bad. Into like an arrow and chase right. you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, I thought, for a long time, that scorpion sting is like a snake bite. Like, you have to go to the hospital every time. It is deadly. You need antivenom. But apparently, like, bugs just don't have the goods to take down people, usually. Unless you eat them. Unless you eat certain ones.
I mean, or unless you've been shrunk by Rick Moranis' machine and...
Yeah.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, then you have a lot to worry about when it comes to scorpions.
Now, I think there are smaller species of scorpions that are more dangerous, so don't let a scorpion sting you. But these big ones, and you could still have an allergic reaction, but so can you, same with a bee.
Bees are, especially honeybees, are a lot less of a problem than the cartoons and stuff make you think that they are when you're a kid. Because bees will most likely not sting you unless you're near their hive. So if you see just a bunch, like or if you try to like catch it or kill it or something like that. But if a bee is flying around you, you're probably fine as long as you don't try to swat at it. Yellow jackets, on the other hand, are like, it should have warned us about yellow jackets instead of warning us about bees.
Even like honeybees, like probably even a few swats, like if you shoot away like a fly,
they're probably because they die when they sting.
I think they would be passive to that.
Oh, like, yeah, just because they don't really they want to defend their hive, mm-hmm, or protect their own lives, and that's pretty much it. So because we have a bunch of bees that come to our palm tree when it flowers, and just for like a few weeks in the spring there will be, you know, dozens of bees swarming around this. But it's like, oh well, we don't really have to worry about them stinging us as long as we don't mess with them.
Yeah,
that's a hard thing to explain to a child though, who has seen in cartoons bees be the number one antagonist in life.
It probably doesn't hurt to have him, or to have children not, you know, have a healthy respect. Respect their distance. True or false, 25 queen ants go into the length of the scorpion.
The hairy desert scorpion. That's the big, ugly black one, right? The one that looks like it could like just ruin your day.
It's like a tan.
Hmm. Because there's one that just looks like a beast. I'll go with true this time, because I have no idea how big this scorpion is.
The correct answer is false. They can be up to 14 centimeters, or 5.5 inches, or 18 queen ants.
Also, scorpions have crab claws and a giant stinger. Like,
I know. Why do they have so much cool stuff going on?
Why do they have so many weapons?
I think the claws are mostly for other scorpions.
It's like, oh, look, it's a shark. It's got like 50 teeth in its face, and it has a Tommy gun. Like, it's yeah, what makes it cooler? Yeah,
exactly. Are you ready to hear some fast facts about the ant?
Yep.
Conimirma. Conimirma ants are found throughout the Americas, ranging from the southwestern United States through Mexico into Central America, as far south as Peru, and even on several Caribbean islands, including Jamaica. As you know, ants, if they find a place they like, they'll stick there.
I do know.
And it has a unique ability to thrive in dry habitats. They thrive where other ant species might struggle, including hot deserts, dry grasslands, disturbed soils. It's a haunted ground.
Don't disturb the soil. Do not disturb the water.
Even roadsides and sandy washes. Their nests are easy to recognize because the entrance is surrounded by a neat volcano-shaped crater. You've seen these craters before.
I have.
Colonies usually place these nests in full sun, where the soil can become extremely hot. They are active during the hottest part of the day in the desert. While many desert ants retreat underground during the hot part of the day, these ants sprint across scorching sand in search of dead insects and certain live prey, nectar, honeydew produced by aphids and other sap-feeding insects. They're quick and dart and zigzag patterns. And they live in colonies, and they are polygynous. Which means they have multiple queens.
Polygynous.
Yeah. It's not a one queen society. They have it's a triumvirate, like what killed Caesar. Or was it after Caesar? Was he part of a triumvirate, or was it? I forget.
I thought the triumvirate was what the assassination. What did him in?
Yeah.
Crew.
Yeah.
It was like two people, and then Brute.
Mm-hmm. Workers do not have specialized soldier castes, so it's just worker ants and males and the queen. And the ants rely on speed, recruitment, and chemical communication rather than powerful jaws or stings.
Speed recruitment. I've gotten calls ants from them together before.
Strong. but yeah, these desert ants have a resistant to the heat. They love the full sun.
I can't say that I say this that I would feel the same.
But that's all I got. Do you have any big facts?
I do. We're a little over time, so I'll make this fast. Because we've been talking about Greeks and
I don't think you have to make it fast because people are here for the ant. Not the Gatsby.
I know, yeah. What? I guess that is kind of dumb. It's like, oh yeah, we spend a lot of time talking about Transformers and Lynx robots and the Great Gatsby. So let's speed through the actual ant that we were going to talk about. So
there's probably some ant enthusiasts that have been skipping through the Gatsby stuff.
I know. All right. Which I totally don't blame you. I would skip through Gatsby stuff too. This major fact is called... Here, hold this. So, as you know, and as we've mentioned almost every time we talk about ants, ants are constantly at war. It's like, you know, Europe. It's just always at war. There's lots of places that are always at war, but that was the one that feel like will get me into the least amount of trouble. They're always, when colonies are constantly expanding and they border other colonies, and where those borders touch, they are fighting each other. It is just ant life. But this ant, the Connemara ant, has an interesting strategy for taking care of rival neighbors. So rather than charging just headfirst into battle, like I guess a myrmidon would do, Connemara ants will collect tiny pebbles, bits of soil, other debris, and then they will drop them into the entrances of the rival ant colonies. When I first heard about this, that these ants drop rocks into rival nests, I was like, oh, they're trying to kill other ants by dropping rocks on them. You can't, nothing that an ant can hold and will kill another ant with gravity. They're just too durable. The point is to block the enemy nest entrance. So it's not, I was picturing the medieval siege defense tactic of dropping rocks onto guys that are stuck in the portcullis, which is why I called the mini murder hole. And the crenellation sensation. This is just absolutely super nerd things.
Is that
things.
What crenellation is?
Well, crenellation is the parts that are sticking up in between the gaps on the top of a castle or a fort where you would stand behind while you were reloading your crossbow or something and then you pop out. So that classic top of the castle look, those are crenellations.
If you got super bonked in the top of the head, you might say, I just got crenellated, but only colloquially.
Yeah, that was a crenellation sensation. I just got there. It was like a tingling in the back of the neck, but it was also a 40-pound rock.
And also a parapet.
The parapet, a buttress. Yes. But the point of dropping rocks onto other ant colonies is not to damage them with the actual thing that they're dropping. It's to partially block the nest entrance, which just forces the rival colony to waste resources digging themselves back out instead of foraging for the food.
It was a prank, bro.
It's starting a race and tripping the person next to you. So it's sabotage. Head start. Yeah, it's sabotage. It is especially useful when, there's a limited amount of, you know, resources, valuable, you know, food or territory or, you know, what have you, aphids. And, you know, you just to get a head start on the day, you drop a bunch of stuff off at their house so that they can't open their door. And you go out and seize the day.
Now, is this attrition? Like, they're devoting like day and time and worker resources to covering the hole. So I wonder if like you could study like, do the ants that cover the hole have more resources? Do they have the advantage?
What's the cost benefit analysis of this?
Yes.
What's the ROI?
I wonder if it's random or if there is an ROI, as in like, if you have the resources to sabotage your neighbors, then you do it.
Well, if it only takes a few ants to block the single entrance or exit to the rival colony, or at least their exit to this portion of the woods or the desert or whatever, it only takes a few ants to drop some things in there to block it, and then they've got to dig themselves out. You've bought yourself precious time to go and do more
forage
stuff. So it's gonna take, so you've stopped that entire portion of that colony with just a few of your ants. The ROI is
but doesn't it take just one ant to move one pebble? So you, if you're an ant on the inside, you just push one pebble? Or is it collapsing the structure?
It's forcing them to dig their way out in a different way.
So it is just like, because the hole is, the entrance is small and surrounded by sand, I guess it is collapsing the structure. Well,
some colonies will dedicate like teams to it. So they'll just repeat, while some are out foraging for food, others are just, their whole job is to go find debris and continue to put it on top of the
thing.
So
those workers aren't finding food. So right. What's the cost-benefit analysis there?
But let's say you have 10 workers. Two of them are dedicated to just putting debris on the rival colony. The other 8 are foraging for food. For the rival colony, all 10 of them are stuck underground.
It's so the bottleneck.
Right, yes.
That's the key. The bottleneck is the key. And then your colony is eating or collecting all the stuff that they would have been foraging.
Yeah, then they stop and you're like, okay, you guys are good. You guys can come out now. Tee-hee-hee. There's nothing
and there's
left.
No more aphid juice left.
No, we got all the aphid juice. We're sipping on it down here.
Uh-huh.
We've got little umbrellas in our aphid juice drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't throw anything at us in retaliation. But it's not in their nature. It also like, yeah, so it minimizes direct combat. And so they lose fewer workers, fewer combatants, and they still weaken the competition. And if they do this enough, they will just, yes, completely. Oh, they will. They'll have a lot more numbers and resources than their rivals, and then can sweep them away. Yeah. So it's like it's the equivalent of parking a dump truck in your rival's driveway, and just being like, I'll come and pick it up at the end of the day when I've taken all of the resources in the area that you wanted.
what are the natural phenomenons that led to this being a practice? There can be none. That's ridiculous.
There can be none. God made them that way. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like the diving bell spider.
Like, well, the idea that an ant drops something in there and realizes that, like, hey, the rivals didn't come out for a while after I did that. I'm going to go tell somebody.
Yeah, that's not how it works. That's not how ants work.
That's not how bugs work.
Ants don't realize things.
And also, why wouldn't others do this? Why wouldn't... Like, the idea is the Connemara ant doesn't have to necessarily worry about this happening to them because it's not in the rivals'
unless it's instincts a different Connemara colony.
Then presumably maybe they would form into a mega colony.
True, they can have multiple queens.
They can work together. Usually rival ants are different species of ant.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How xenophobic.
I know, yeah. Hey, I'm bicolor and you're monocolored. Mm. Time to die.
Yeah.
We will be at war forever. This is not In Living Color. I actually know nothing about In Living Color. I hope that made even a little bit of sense.
I don't know what that is.
It's old 70s show. I think it's a variety show. Again, I'm way out of my depth here. I just remembered the name of the show. But yeah, that's all what I got. It's the Connemara ant.
That's all I got.
It's a rude bully. It is a bully. I mean, it is an ant. There's a movie called The Ant Bully.
True.
Starring Nicolas Cage.
Who did probably something very similar, which is collapsing colonies and making ants have to dig out. That's what you did. If this is what happens, if you drop some pebbles on the... imagine all the times you crush an anthill when you're a kid. Resources.
When I'm a kid, I crush anthills now because they're in my yard. Like, waste precious resources building that while I go get the ant spray because you're fire ants and I can't have you in my yard.
Mm.
But
now who's at war?
Me and I'm winning. engaging in chemical warfare here. Yeah, that's all I got. You got anything else?
That's all I got.
All right, that was the Connemara ant for you out there in Podcastia. Live life in Technicolor. Use the environment to your advantage and use medieval siege tactics to passive-aggressively block your neighbor's door shut, like the Connemara ant here in Life, Death, and Taxonomy.
Hey Taxonomy Titans, I just want to remind you that we have a Patreon that you can find by going to ldtaxonomy.com/donate. All of our episodes are uploaded there. Sign up for free to engage with us, leave episode suggestions, or chat with other animal enthusiasts. If you find it in your heart to donate, it will help us cover some costs and continue to make the show. Plus, we'll thank you every week. Most importantly, thank you all for listening.
My favorite in the world podcast.
Do you say passively aggressively or passive aggressively? Probably
passively aggressive.
One. No, because the it's an adverb.
Yeah.
So it is passively aggressive, but it's also aggressively passive.
Passively aggressively.
Which one of those gets turned into an adverb?